That's good. Terrific. Thank you. Hello, Patricia. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. For those who've just tuning in, and the show is Love, Lust, and Laughter. But Patricia Raskin's show is the Patricia Raskin Show, and I was on it. This is Voice America to promote my book a couple of weeks ago, and Patricia is a new friend and colleague, and I'm just so pleased about that. She is. She has a powerhouse voice, positive lifestyle and aging, and positive media pioneer. And your programs have aired, this is impressive, on Fox, PBS, NPR, and your internet radio and podcast program, the Patricia Raskin Positive Living Show, is in its 19th year. That's longevity in and of itself, Patricia. 19th year.
Hi, Diana.
Hi. So you have a wonderful program. People can see a little bit of the on your website, patriciaraskin.com, all about your podcast productions, where you will help people produce podcasts, and your speaking and training. You're a very busy, involved woman. And I loved your trailer for Positive Aging. I guess this is, you're hoping to get a show in Rhode Island where you live on PBS, Positive Aging, Positive Living.
Yeah, I presented an idea to the Rhode Island Public Television broadcast system, and they really liked it. And I wrote a proposal, and we did a pilot, a 30-minute pilot. And from that pilot, we created a demo, a four-minute demo. And so now we're going to companies and raising funds so that we can produce at least a 13- or 15-week series. So that was,
terrific.
That was this past year. Right, and then in 1995, 15 years ago, I did a very similar program in North Carolina that aired on PBS. I developed it and wrote it. So 15 years later, I'm doing the same thing in Rhode Island. Hopefully, with COVID-19, there's a little slow up on funding, as I'm sure you know.
Yes, that's right. But the trailer for your Positive Living, Positive Aging is wonderful, where you point out that in 2030, one in five people then will be older than 65. And that we certainly all want a meaningful life. You talk about that and dealing with loss and some health challenges and experience and wisdom. So let's talk about some of these things. But maybe let's talk about your podcasting, because your podcast program. I like what you say. You say, if you can find this out on her website, in just 30 minutes, you'll discover how having your own podcast program can increase your know, like, and trust factor.
Right.
And double your exposure so you can attract more clients. Lots of people are doing podcasts these days, aren't they?
Yeah.
Maybe it has to do with the that we're all having to be inside these days, except for exercise.
Yeah. It's interesting because I had someone say to me today and say, you know, you'll have to sit down and tell me what a podcast is. And what I want you to say is a podcast is a radio. In the 1930s mm-hmm. and 40s, we were in the golden days of radio. In 2019, we're in the golden days of podcasting, which is nothing mm-hmm. more than a radio show that is digital. I've been doing digital radio for 20 years. I mean, on voiceamerica.com, it was really, in those days, it would have been considered a podcast because it was digital, but they didn't mm-hmm. call it that then.
That's true. So, yes, and this is a podcast too, but it's actually live. So the show, since it's live, I get to call it a radio show, and then it's archived, and then it's a podcast. But it's a wonderful way to get out such good information. And I'm thrilled that you're on the program today because you are an expert in positive aging. And
Thank you. I wouldn't go that far, but I would say this. I would say that I've devoted my life to my work starting in my 30s to positive living. And so as I've gotten older, it's still positive living. It's just older, so it's positive aging. And it's really all of the same things, Diana, except that there are a few more considerations as we get older, right? We may not move quite as quickly. We may have some joint issues. We may not see quite as well. But it doesn't have to stop us because we have things that will help us, right? Whether it's glasses or we're a hearing device or whether we, you know, walk instead of run, we're still moving. We're still getting the same things done. So it's an adaptation, but we can live a long, healthy life. And there are cultures on this planet that live way beyond 100, and they're healthy. It's lifestyle.
And one of the people that you have interviewed, you've interviewed some impressive people, but one of those people talks about the blue zones.
Right.
And tell us a little bit more. What is his name again?
He's amazing. Dan Buettner is a National Geographic explorer, and he wrote 4 or 5 books called The Blue Zones. And one of his books on blue zones he searched the world to find the healthiest people on the planet and the people who live the longest and the healthiest.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 5. I think one is Sardinia. One, I believe, is where the, not Mormons, Seventh-day Adventists live in California. I think it's Loma Linda. I can look these
up. It is Loma Linda, yes.
Right. And then there's... I think there's an island off of Greece, and there's, I think, something in India. Anyway, there are 5 places, and this is where people live the longest. And he found several things. He found, one, that they eat mostly a plant-based diet. That's one. They have very strong relationships. They don't exercise, per se, the way we think of going to the gym. They just move all the time. And, you know, they have fresh food and fresh air. It's a different lifestyle. They don't have the stresses we have. They're not in a car all the time with the fumes and people aggravating them.
Yes. So, Dan, he must have been a fascinating person to interview. You also interviewed Maya Angelou. Tell us a little bit about that and what that was like.
I have always
admired her, of course.
Yeah. And I've interviewed her twice, and it was about, well, obviously before she passed, it was maybe 6-7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And she was just one of those remarkable women that did not have an angry bone in her body, that loved everybody. It almost reminded me of Mother Teresa. Now, she had a lot of issues growing up. I mean, I think she was abused, and I think she didn't talk for a while. Tough, tough background. And just talked about love. And a lot of the women that admire her have become her children, if you will. And I remember after that interview, I stood there and I just shook, because it was just to speak to her. Her energy, her vibration was so pure. And I will tell you that I have a friend who is a producer who knew her very well, and he would visit her, and she would, like, dress up to see him, and he would say, "Oh, Miss Angelou, you're all dressed up for me." And she'd say, "Well, of course I am. You're coming today." I mean, it was a whole different, it's like living in the moment to the max. And even when I interviewed her, she said, "Oh, this was such a wonderful interview. You are so," it was just very special woman, very, very special woman, really and truly. Yeah,
and even our icon, I'm sorry, I'm just blanking all of a sudden. That happens, I guess, as we get older.
Yeah.
She was such good friends with,
Oprah.
Oprah Winfrey.
Oprah Winfrey.
I don't know why I did that. Every now and then that happens. But they were such good friends. I think Oprah Winfrey even took her on a, made her the centerpiece of a cruise that they did for I think it was Oprah Winfrey's birthday or something, her 50th birthday.
But
she was living in the moment, and she said so many inspiring things. The quote that I have in my book, Love in the Time of Corona, Chapter 10, Recommit to Your Relationship, her quote is, life loves to be taken by the lapels and told, I'm with you, kid. Let's go.
Yeah.
So positive.
Well, you know, there's something that I've learned from that, and it's taken me all these many, many years, and I'm just learning it now. And I'm, you know, I mean, in my later years. So I'm just learning this now, and it's amazing how my relationships are transforming. Even the older ones, the ones I've had for years, is, and I can't even explain it, Diana, but I am no longer clinging. Now, let me explain that. There's an energy we put out there where we want more. You know, we want to be with our friend, but there's a neediness that we sometimes put out. Oh, I wish I had more time with you. Oh, I wish, there's like a little bit of a grabby, you know, like, oh, well, I see that person again. I can't explain it, but when I had given all that up and I just focused on, Diana, I'm with you right now, and I just love being with you right now, it's amazing what happens. People are so more open, and then they want to be with you more because they don't feel any pull. Does that make sense to you, Diana?
Well, absolutely. And when we can be in the moment, we don't have to be worrying about the future or having guilt about the past. I mean, we can be really in the moment. And I think it's essential that we have the mindfulness these days and the being in the moment. Keeping your eyes open, your pores open, your brain open, and not closing down the shop.
And not always thinking, oh, well, gee, wouldn't this have been better with you if we could have done this? You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, well, I'll give you an example, just a benign one. Oh, well, wouldn't it have been better if I could have talked to Diana by Zoom instead of the phone? Well, that kind of negates the conversation I had with you. And I used to do that. I would do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't that example, but it was something like, you'd have a good time, and then you'd say, oh, but wouldn't it have been better if we could have? And you know what? I've stopped doing that, and it has made a big difference, a big difference.
I think it's really important to do that, and it may happen for those of us who are older, because there are some, and it's highlighted even a little more these days with COVID-19, such a deadly pandemic. That we can feel we feel a little more the nearness of death. We're needing a little more reassurance that somehow, that we're still part of the dance of life, but we have to keep that neediness tamped down in certain instances. And I think that's what you're talking about.
Because it's true. You know, I mean, what if, you know, the person isn't there tomorrow, or what if they leave their job, or what if they get fired, or what if that friend gets sick? You know what I mean? And you don't know that. We don't know that, Diana. You can walk out of my place today, and tomorrow you could get sick. We don't know that. So I'm much more cognizant of that, of like, look, I've got this time with this person. Make the most of it. Whereas I don't think
make the most of it.
We thought of this.
Yeah. That's so important to make the most of the time. I would say 20 years ago, a good girlfriend of mine said, oh, Diana, I'm so glad to spend time with you because I do have a small number of girlfriends who are kind of boring, and I call them my no-dos. Friends, I have to take no-dos before I get together with them. So we're much more particular about who we spend time with, and when we're with that person, we want to make the most of it. Absolutely. That because life is uncertain. That's why my motto is carpe diem, damn it. You know, we've got to seize the day and do it.
Right, and I think life was always uncertain. But I think now we're more aware of it because of COVID-19, don't you?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, I never expected my husband, my last husband who died at 57, I never expected that he would die. It was so sudden and so shattering. And we were in an aerobics class at a spa, and he had a heart attack right in front of me. And he didn't even have heart disease. So it, again, when you've experienced something like this, you really get it, that we just, life is uncertain. And we've, and the good thing about, there was one good thing about my grieving. There were several things. I grew deeper. But also, I realized I didn't have regrets. Regrets about what we had not done or regrets about what we had not said, because we had said it all and done it all in my mind. And actually, studies have shown that the grieving process is smoother when we don't have those, oh, I wished I had, if only I had, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, because those regrets can create potholes in the path of grief. And so I was relieved to, it made the path of grief a little smoother not to have those regrets. But we need to live life so that we don't have regrets, so that we make the most we make the most of our close relationships.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that can be a lifelong lesson. That doesn't come overnight. At least it didn't for me.
Yes. No, it is. It. I think that we become wiser if we keep our eyes open and we're learning and improving. We do become wiser with experience and more differentiated, too. That's the David Snarch differentiation, that we don't have to get our validation met only through someone else. That, in other words, we can pat ourselves on the shoulder and say, yeah, I'm okay. I'm more than okay. So to be differentiated is to be able to stand on your own two feet and to have that sort of confidence.
Thank you. I've developed.
Yes.
I think, as you said, as you get older, I think that can happen. As you get older. I remember my dad, who died about 8 years ago. He was pretty wise. And I remember him saying, if you only knew then what you know now, if I had my youth with my wisdom of this age, my life would be different.
Yes. And did he give an example of that? I like that philosophy. It's very healthy.
Well, I mean, I think of things that I've done in my younger years, but now when I think back, I say if I had the wisdom, I wouldn't have done those things. I might have made a different choice. Right, but I think part of that is going through it, because you don't know till you go through it. So it's hard really to say that, right? Because we haven't been through it.
That is very true. One of the more famous studies it's called the Longevity Project, and it was started in 1921 by a Stanford University psychologist, Lewis Terman. And I think this is a fascinating study, because in 1921, he recruited 1,500 elementary school students. And he began an academic inquiry that would last, this is 8 decades plus now, right? And he followed his subjects into adulthood. And then he passed away in 1956, and two other scientists also at Stanford, I believe, they picked up where he left off, and they began poring over this wealth of data, and that really seemed to contribute to lengthy lifespans. And so they came up with five tips that, and I'd really like you to respond to these because I think it crosses over into your work so well. And the first tip for this the longevity project from the data, 9 decades, give more to live more. That it's no secret that people with a strong social support system tend to live longer. But, you know, it turns out that it's not what your friends and family do for you. It's what you do for them that counts.
Mm-hmm.
And Terman had some subjects, men and women who liked to lend a helping hand, the ones who cared for their neighbors. And we're seeing this in these days, aren't we, with people helping other people who are really struggling with financial problems and health problems and all of that because of the pandemic. So giving more to live more. I'll just give the headings and maybe we can come circle back to talk a little bit more about them. Number two was run the rat race. If you have a job that is challenging to you and you have responsibility, then it's even better than doing your dream job. And then train without pain. That's all about exercise. Fret a little. That means thinking good things. Think good things and good things will happen, right? Not necessarily. The two psychologists, Friedman and Martin, that followed up on Terman's study found that too much, this is so interesting to me because I'm such an optimistic person, and I think you are too, but too much optimism could be detrimental to longevity, as high cholesterol and hypertension is. So always assuming the best, they found, they say, may leave you unequipped to deal with the worst. And this goes against all of my just thinking, but such as trauma or illness. So a little worry keeps you warmed up for the curveballs that life throws. And, of course, the fifth tip, as a sex therapist, I really like, and that's have more fun in bed. And so back in the early 20s, Terman got women to talk about their sexual satisfaction and the average amount of time they spent being intimate with their husbands. And guess what? The frequency of their orgasms increased with the more time they spent with their husbands, and these women also lived longer the more often they reached climax. But going back to fretting a little or running the right rat race or giving more to live more, do some of these resonate for you?
I think probably the giving more to live more, because I think when we give many times, that's, I think it's a natural tendency for people to want to give. It's very healing. It's very gratifying. Mm-hmm. And because when you're giving, you're also receiving. I mean, think about it. I mean, if we want to look at this from a sexual point of view, when you're with a partner and you're giving to that partner and you're pleasing that partner, well, you're receiving too, because you're receiving that sort of acknowledgement that you're making them happy or you're giving them joy. So I think that's a very big thing. And if you look at that in another way, where you're with a person and you don't feel you're giving them any pleasure, then that's not as gratifying. Think about it. I'm doing this more from a physical standpoint, but I think
it's good.
I think it's a good example. Yeah, it's a good example because, you know, again, there's just you get the pleasure because that person really is getting joy. Or if that person just has no joy from it, then, you know, it may not be something that you even want to continue that often, because it's not, you don't feel anything back. So I think this is a visceral way that you do
you see that satisfaction by giving.
Actually, yes, and you're looking at this from a physical standpoint and an emotional standpoint, but that applies to hugging and to massaging too. That when you're giving a hug, you're also getting benefits. When you're giving a massage, you're also getting benefits for yourself. I mean, it's been shown even in research. So, yeah. It's good to give.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you also talk about how resilience is such a critical part of positive aging. Can you expand on that a bit, Patricia?
Yeah, I just did a whole workshop on that this morning, a whole webinar for an hour on resilience. And it's part of living, and particularly during these times, it's that bounce back factor. And then there are about 20 questions you can take a quiz. And in fact, I think you can look it up under resilience quiz, and you can take a quiz and it tells you how resilient you are. And it's very much about, you know, how can you not just bounce back from situations, but how much joy can you bring in your life, and how much can you pivot, you know, if you have to change, how quick are you adapting to change? How can you turn a negative into a positive? How do you, there's many of them, which I can get my list, but it's very much about how do you bounce back and be able to see that solution in a different way. So it's that kind of adapting, that adaptability, and that changing.
Yes. And if you're resilient, you also probably can embrace change more readily. I think one sign of good mental health is having a high tolerance for ambiguity. You know, you don't, and this is especially true these days because that's what's really hard about this COVID-19 thing. We don't really know how it's going to turn out.
That's right. That's what I say all the time in my workshops.
Yes. So being resilient and having a high tolerance for ambiguity does make a difference. We can be in the moment, embrace the change, see what's going to happen. But that does take some positive living, which you talk about a lot, and some confidence, and maybe some maturing as well. That's why older people are sometimes healthier mentally than younger people. And happier, too. You've seen those studies.
Yes. Yes, I have.
Yes.
And more satisfaction.
So what was your workshop like? Tell me, were there any, did you get any feedback from your people or some examples?
Well, when you do a webinar, usually it's online, so people are writing in the chat room and they're sharing. But, you know, there was a lot about how are you, how have you been resilient in your life? You know, how have you adapted? And it's very much, again, that bounce back factor. I think something you said, Diana, I think if you've had adversity in your life, then I think it's going to be easier for you to bounce back because you know what it is. You know, in that sense, I think having a harder life at times, this may come in handy, if you know what I mean. This one may come in handy only because you've been through it. So you're already hardier. It's like having to walk through the storm, right? For somebody who's never been in the rain, it's going to affect them more difficult. But we talked about what does it take to be resilient and how do you define resilience and what is your own personal resilience level. And those are the kinds of things we talked about. And then people did take a resilience quiz, which was very interesting. And I can share some of those with you if you'd like. Just some of the things
that
we talked about. Yeah. So we rated ourselves on 1 to 5. Things like adapting quickly, good at bouncing back from difficulties. And then you rated yourself, you know, 1 meaning very little and then 5 meaning a lot. And then can you calm yourself in a crisis? Solving problems logically. Optimistic, seeing difficulties as temporary. Thinking up creative solutions. Finding the humor.
asking questions, being curious, being flexible, learning from the experience, anticipating problems, tolerating ambiguity and uncertainty, being a good listener, recovering emotionally from losses, keep on going during tough times, being stronger through difficult circumstances, and converting misfortune into good fortune. And so on each of these people, we would rate ourselves from 1 to 5 and see how resilient we were.
I bet you turned out to be very resilient.
I am pretty resilient, but that's
yes.
From experience.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it makes a difference. I bet you do these sorts of webinars. I know on your website, I want to tell it again, patriciaraskin.com, R-A-S-K-I-N. One of the things you say that I like so much is, my belief is in human potential. But you have speaking and training possibilities there and other webinars, and people can, in addition to your podcast productions, and my goodness, you've won lots of awards too over the years. That's given you confidence too as a presenter.
It has. It's interesting. I don't know whether it's age or experience or setbacks or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But there comes a point, and there has for me, where you just, you know what you know, and you know you're good at what you do. And that took me a long time. Because I think I was with a lot of other people, which is, oh, yeah, but look at what they did. Oh, but they've got 4 shows. Oh, but they do. And you know what? You can't compare, Diana, because you have your own unique style. And I'm finally coming to that. You know, instead of, oh, well, look where they are. It doesn't help us grow. And I think we all have enough to give in our own unique way.
That is an important point, that you can't compare and you have your own unique style. And something that you might say really can resonate for a person, and for another person it might not so much because of their own life experience or lack thereof. I mean, you also made a very good point about if you've had adversity in your life, it can be a little easier because you've been through it. You have the confidence that you know, the trust and the confidence that you can get through this tough time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, or sometimes, and I'll tell you this, I'm speaking for me now, is when you've gone through a very tough time, and, so, again, when I say tough time, like the dark night of the soul, and it could be, as I've said before, it could be a health issue, it could be a financial issue, it could be a relationship issue, but whatever it is, if it's really, really painful for you and really hard, like the hardest thing you think you could ever go through, you can't imagine, and you get through it. I really believe you come out stronger on the other side. I've seen it. I've seen it in my life. And it's you can't, I hate to say, I mean, I wouldn't wish it on people, but it really, there's something about it that if you can get through that, which you feared and what you felt was horrible, and you got through it and you made it and you came out better, it's like nothing stops you after that. I mean, that's just my experience.
Well, it's mine, too. It makes us stronger women, for sure. I wouldn't have wished the death of a beloved husband on anybody, but I learned so much from it. And I've already touched on what I learned, and I'm grateful that I didn't have regrets about it. But, yeah, it deepens you as a person, and as long as you can keep your eyes open and learn and improve and know that you're hardy. You use the word hardy. I like that word, hardy. You can become more hardy, and you can come better from a place of abundance. For instance, knowing that, geez, you know, there's enough love to go around. rather than a place of scarcity. And going a little bit off topic, but that's one reason why blended families often have trouble, because they don't believe that there is enough love to go around with a step-parent or a step-kid. So if you can come from that place of abundance, that comes from confidence and love and, yes, and forgiveness. You talk about repairing and forgiving. Mm-hmm. Let's move into that, repairing and forgiving past wounds as we age, because, boy, isn't forgiveness important? Forgiveness is an inside job, and if we don't forgive, it's pretty toxic.
Yeah, I want to share something about that. I want to go back to something you said, which ties into forgiveness. And that is that I think you have to, and this has been said so many times that people say, oh, if I hear that one more time, you have to love yourself. And people go, oh, ho-hum, ho-hum, BS. It's not BS, right? It's not, because when you really do love yourself, and what I mean by that is you're strong, you can hold your own. When you have that, then all these things that move you to the left and right and sway you in the wind don't sway you as much. And you can forgive because you're strong enough in yourself that, and I'll give you an example without, and I won't mention fully names, but I have a family member that there was a falling out at one period, and there's not an estrangement, but it wasn't what it was. And it was hard for me to understand because, and this person, I realized that this is just the way this person is. And I have forgiven and I send love and it's come around, not to the way it was before. But I'm no longer saying, oh, well, I just hope it could be the way it was. And, well, I just hope they change. I don't do that anymore. I just say, well, I'm glad. You know, there's talking a little bit, and there's been a meeting once in a while. But I'm looking at whatever that thing is that they're holding as their issue and not mine. Because I feel strong enough. I've looked at my end of it. And that's where I think forgiveness comes in. It comes in when you are strong enough in yourself. You can look at yourself square in the face and say, okay, what was my part? Okay, fine. All right, I got it, and yes. And I'm willing to talk about that. And if they can't get past that, I can't help that because it's not my responsibility, nor can I. You can't change anybody. So that's where I think the forgiveness ties into self-strength and self-love.
Very beautifully articulated, Patricia. Thank you. And so true. It's their issue, not mine, separating it out. And that can help a lot of couples, too, because lots of couples are having lots more arguments with this forced togetherness. And so we need more forgiveness in general, not just about family members. Well, of course, a partner is a family, becomes a family member. But yes, forgiveness, if we don't forgive, it's so toxic, it just rails, it harms you more than the other person, really. But I like how you separate this out. It's their issue, not mine. And what was my part in it? And owning that and figuring that out takes a lot of maturity and self-awareness.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. So you also, because you work a lot with ageism, and I love your title that you sent me, Turning Ageisms into Agegasms. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, how do we change the concept of ageism that is so prevalent in our culture, in our country? How do we change that?
Well, one person at a time, Diana.
Yeah,
you know, we don't have this in other cultures. I mean, there are other cultures where people who are older are revered, and you don't see that in our country. Part of it is, you know, youth is personified and we all have to look and have no wrinkles and all of that. All of that sort of cosmetic stuff, if you will. But I think it's, I think where it probably will change now is because we have an older population. And I think, what is it, by 2024, over half? I mean, I have to look at the stats. But many of us will be over 65. And so having said that, I think it's 25%. I have to look that up. But having said that, we'll have to change because we're going to be in strong numbers. And if we want to live longer, we're going to have to make changes in our behavior and our lifestyle. And so as people see older people as vital and vibrant and not always infirmed or sick, if that becomes the standard for older people rather than, oh, I'm going to decline when I get older, then it will change. That's what I think.
I think that's very true. So I want to make a quote here that's very appropriate from an MD named Thomas Pearls. He's a Boston University geriatrician. And he says, it's a myth that the older you get, the sicker you get. It's more like the older you get, the healthier you've been. So we do need to start to take care of ourselves, really from childhood, do healthy things, but it's never too late to start.
I want to start to this, Diana.
Yes.
People over
yes.
65 and overrepresented 15.2% of the population in the year of 2016, but they're expected to grow to be 21.7% of the population by 2040. The 85 and over population is projected to more than double from 6.4 million in 2016 to 14.6 million in 2040.
Who was it that said, it's a famous quote, but I can't think who said it, if I'd known I would live this long, I would have taken better care of myself.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll look that up, too.
But that shows that lots more older folks are going to be around. So the aging test, I think I gave this to you off the air, but the aging test that Dr. Walter Bortz and I came up with in the early 90s when we were doing a series on aging and sexuality in Palo Alto, and actually two different series, and they were later published in medical journals, so that's how come I get to call myself a gerontologist. So the aging test is it's very simple. It's a test to help you determine whether you're working toward 100 or maybe just sliding through life. So it measures progress in four areas. And I think all of these areas are necessary for successful aging. And they're moving, thinking, making love, and pursuing life's meaning, however you define it. So you give yourself, this is it in a nutshell, you give yourself 1 point each day, you walk a mile, 1 point each day if you read a book, 1 point each day if you make love, and you get only 1 point per category. So if you walk 2 miles, you don't get 2 points. And it's a little harder to, there are lots of equivalents for moving and thinking, but it's a little harder to come up with equivalents for making love. But hugging, touching, all of those things do count. And pursuing life's meaning actually gives you 2 points each day. So you want to keep your points up as you age, and if you have a maximum daily score is 5 points, and the maximum weekly score is 35 points, and it's going to be hard to keep those scores at 35 points as you age, but you are staying strong and smart and sexy, and all of those things will help you age in a positive, successful way. Because they're all use it
absolutely.
Or lose it things, really. Use it or lose it.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
And the points that you get for pursuing meaning of life is it can be something as simple as, well, I'm making a difference in my grandchildren's lives,
mm-hmm.
or I'm volunteering. Now, older people with COVID-19 going on can't always volunteer like they used to, but it'll come back. But the main thing about meaning, and you have meaning in your life, I have meaning in my life, we're very fortunate, I think, because we have that kind of meaning. We have work that does make a difference. But making a difference does, you can do that in lots of little ways, too. And what would you have a comment about meaning for people?
You mean what is meaningful to them?
Yes. And staying from the standpoint of the aging test, pursuing what you consider meaningful in life or the meaning of life.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question, and I'm thinking about that in terms of, has it changed for me over the years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and let me just tune in on that for a minute. Yeah, I think it has, and I think it has for a lot of us as we get older. I think the material things don't become as important, and the inner qualities become more important, right?
Mm-hmm.
The friendships, the companionship, the good communication, the security, the safety, feeling wanted. I mean, we've always wanted that, but I think it's even more important now. It's even more important. You know, if making a purchase, not just for that beautiful thing, but making sure that that purchase is going to bring me some kind of inner satisfaction or really meet a very important need.
Yes, the inner satisfaction. And I think you're right. It does, the meaning, it changes over the years for people, because the question of how to live a meaningful life, well, I think it's come up for a lot of people of every generation. And I must say, as a therapist, it's come up, too, with my clients. And, well, I think Sigmund Freud, he said things that can be very comforting during uncertain times. Believe it or not, Sigmund Freud. And one of the features of the last years of Freud's life was his philosophy of acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
The courage to look at reality, not to flinch.
Mm-hmm.
Take a step back instead and accept. Because we live in a society where we're always told we have to aim for the stars, to persevere, to do. And there are some situations where that isn't actually helpful. So you want to figure out to manage your emotions, and especially in these times. And it can often give you greater tranquility by moving to acceptance.
Right. I also think it's important, as I'm sure you work with your clients on this, is owning those emotions. You know, owning the anger, owning the frustration. Yes, I'm angry. And you know why? Because we've lost something. This is a loss. The coronavirus is a loss. Even if it's given you things, like it's given me, you know, more time at home. That's all wonderful, but there's a loss we have. We're not going to the movies the way we were. We're not eating out as much as we were. We're eating at home all the time. We can't go to the events we used to do before. We can't see our friends the way we did before. That is a loss. And so we need to own those emotions and get through them.
Absolutely. There's loss, and it requires some grieving. And there's different kinds of grieving, but I think in this day and age with COVID, we have to grieve those losses and figure out what we're going to do next, but first grieve the losses.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very important.
It sure is. It sure is. Do we want to talk about how do you find love in your later years?
Sure.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Finding love in your later years. Well, I think online dating, you know, the fastest growing age sector in online dating is people over 50.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know that. Interesting.
And the main eHarmony and Match.com, and there's another one for seniors. Forgotten what it is. There's several that are dedicated to people over 50. And that can certainly help people find love over 50. That's how I found my husband 10 years ago on Match.com. We would have never found each other if it hadn't been for Match.com.
Hmm.
I think their algorithms work very well because we're extremely compatible. And when I was younger, just to harken back to something you said earlier, I think having a wealthy man, a man who could really provide for me, and that was true of my late husband, and not so true of my current husband with the wealth factor, but he's everything else. He doesn't have a narcissistic bone in his body. He is just, and he's a Renaissance man. And so what's important, and I think material things are a little less important to me now. It's more character and values and support and love and being a good sexual partner and having sexual skills and just thinking that, you know, I have my partner's best interests at heart. And I get that from Brian, and I think he gets it from me. So those are shifts, and it'll help us find love, I think, if we can evaluate what we're looking for, what do you really want,
and
what you're looking for, what do you want. Yeah, so
what are the most important things? What are the key factors? What are your non-negotiables? You know, what are your absolute non-negotiables? For some people, it's health issues. Like a smoker might be a non-negotiable for someone. Somebody may want someone in their faith for whatever reason, and so it's a non-negotiable. Someone may need somebody who exercises and is in very good shape. Non-negotiable for them. And so you've got to know what your non-negotiables are. For other people, there are different non-negotiables. So I think you have to know what are the things that are nice, but not necessary, won't make or break it. You know, and what are the inner qualities? I mean, does somebody have to be, you know, very expressive and very emotive? I mean, sometimes you'll meet somebody who doesn't always share their feelings. Do you want somebody who's very open? Okay, well, then that's a non-negotiable. So I think at any age, you have to look at that. But I think as you get older, it depends, though. I'll give you an example of that. It depends. If you're older and you've been single for a long time, let's say you've been divorced for a long time, you've learned how to take care of yourself. So you're more willing, I think, to say, these are my non-negotiables. This is what I'm looking for. Okay. Whereas sometimes if you've been in a long-term relationship and you're only out of the relationship for a year and you're really lonely, you may settle more. But having said that, if you've been in a great relationship for many, many years, then it may be easier for you to find right away somebody who would give you a great relationship because that's what they're used to. They've been in a great relationship, so now they know how to do that. So, you know, it's different things with different people. But I do think it's important to really look at and not pass over the things that are very important to you because if you do, it will come back to haunt you later, is my feeling.
It does. I think, and I've had this experience with some of my clients, some of my single clients. I work mostly with couples, but some individuals too. And a question that they often have in terms of the search for a new person is, well, I prompt this question, what do I really want in a relationship? And let's figure that out. And that's what you're saying, too. Figure out what your non-negotiable right. issues are and right. what inner qualities do you want. And yeah. the whole Buddhist idea of moving toward what we visualize comes into play here, too. And
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
And by the way, I did find your mm-hmm. quote. I looked it up. It was Mickey Mantle. If I knew I was going to live this long, I had taken better care of myself.
Thank you for looking that up. You must be in front of your computer, and I'm not. But
I am.
Yes. And that's a kind of a famous quote.
Yeah.
And Tallulah Bankhead said something that's a little bit similar, but not really. And she said, if I'd known how long I was going to live, I would have made all the same mistakes, only sooner.
Yeah, I remember that one.
But that's relevant because we certainly can learn from our mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. and that's yeah. why it's such a good question to ask if you're in a new relationship, or if it maybe even on a first date for online dating, and they say yeah. they're divorced or they're widowed, but especially if divorced, what did you learn from that relationship? What were some takeaways?
Yeah.
What did you learn?
So. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's boy, life is never boring, right? If you keep keep thinking about these things and dealing with them and figuring out what it is you want and need and going for it, it helps a lot to be healthy and to be optimistic, I think. And
yeah,
you're just
so.
As we close the show, talk a little bit more about your belief in human potential, because that's on your website.
Yeah, I'd like to do that, but I'd love to give out my website, too, if I can.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I just think that so much is perception. It's the way we see something. It's not the event. It's the way we view it. It's not, you know, it's not the traffic jam. It's the way we see it. And it's, mm-hmm. you make a choice. You know, do I want to see it as half full? Do I want to go through life angry and negative and bitter? Then I can. Or do I want to change things around? And what I have found is that as you see human potential and as you are more positive and as you see the goodness in people, it comes back to you because they then act that way because they see something different in you. And so they act that way. I've seen it. I've really seen people turn around when your behavior is more loving and accepting. That's what I've seen.
And, I love that idea. Let's, before the music comes on, you give out your website again, and I did mention it earlier. It'll also be in the show notes, but give out your website, please.
Well, there are three of them. My main one
three
is patriciaraskin.com. But inside that website are the two others. I help people create their own podcast shows and radio shows, or I help them to improve the shows they have because I've done so many. So it's produceapodcast.com or improvemypodcast.com. Mm-hmm. But those links are also in patriciaraskin.com.
Yes.
And I really appreciate this time. It's been wonderful. Thank you, Diana.
Oh, you're welcome. I was so happy that I could find you through my own interview for my publicizing my book a couple of weeks ago. And we have become friends, including Facebook
yes.
friends. I love that.
Me too.
We're on a lot of the same pages here, and we can appreciate successful aging. So thank you again. There's the music. Thank you. Have you back, Patricia?
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Good. Thank you. Bye, everybody.